Hi, I'm Dennis Devlin, the host of Crosscast, the voice of Cross International. Join me and our reporters as we bring you the biggest interviews and breaking news headlines from across the world of sport, including football, rugby, cricket, tennis, and much, much more. That's Crosscast with me, Dennis Devlin, the voice of Cross International. Cross International, the world's game open to all. Well, good evening and welcome to Crosscast, the voice of Cross International, with me, Dennis Devlin. And tonight we have a very special guest. It is former footballer Alan Thompson. And of course, coming up later, we have Kieran Gallup from Cross International, who'll bring us up to date with the very latest sports headlines. All that to come on Crosscast with me, Dennis Devlin. But first, this.
Three in the box for the cross. One is Hartson. Another is Alan Thompson. He hits Celtic in front. Thompson's up.
Welcome back to Crosscast with me, Dennis Devlin, and a very warm welcome to professional footballer, former Glasgow Celtic, Newcastle United and Bolton player. It is, of course, the amazing Alan Thompson. Good afternoon, Alan.
Good afternoon, Dennis. Thanks for having us.
It's an absolute pleasure. I know how incredibly busy you are right now. You are currently on the rounds promoting a brand new book, A Geordie Boy.
Yeah, certainly am. Being very busy.
You are indeed. So we'll crack on right away because I know you're a busy man. And I'll just get on straight away with the questions. Alan, how did the idea to publish a book, A Geordie Boy, come about? And was it something you'd always planned to do?
No, it wasn't something I ever fancied doing, to be honest. It was something I've seen a lot of the lads do. Our ex-teammates, Paul Merson, Stan Collymore, obviously Celtic teammates like Chris Sutton, John Orton, Stillian, Petroff, Lenny. It was just something I've never really fancied doing, to be honest. And then... obviously, the author. A few people have asked us over the years to do a book, and I've always declined. Just got to the stage. Someone got in touch, Jamie Boyle, the author, and I decided might be a good time to put my side across. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's great to hear from you. And obviously, one of the major personal stories that I know is included in the book is about the bad car crash that you were involved in. I think when you were a bit younger, before you started your professional career. What happened in that incident, Alan?
Well, it was about 11 o'clock at night. I'd been down to Elland Road, Leeds, to watch Leeds Reserves against Newcastle Reserves. I was only 16, not long left school. And we had a bad accident. The guy driving the old-style Mini fell asleep at the wheel and hit the centre reservation, and the car flipped. And not a nice feeling at all. Pitch black, no lights on that part of the A1 in County Durham, and we ended up on the roof, and the rest was history. Like, you know, I spent a few weeks in hospital, touch and go whether I'd walk again, never mind play football again. So I was extremely lucky, but a frustrating time for myself, and no doubt my parents and my close family as well.
Yeah, I can imagine. Obviously, you've been laid there all the time thinking about your career. Could it be over?
Yeah, it was a Wednesday night. Late in the evening, and I was due to be meeting up with the England under-17s on the Saturday. I'd just been told a few days prior to that I'd be captain, which was a great honour. But I was that deluded when I got into hospital with the drugs and stuff, painkillers and what have you. I was asking the doctors and the nurses if I'd be fit to travel and meet up with the team on the Saturday.
Well,
they knew pretty quickly that I certainly wasn't going to be in any shape to meet up in any time soon. So I was still hoping, even on the Wednesday night when I got to hospital, that I might be able to meet up with the England team on the Saturday, but it wasn't to be.
Wow, I think I can imagine that must have been absolutely heartbreaking for you. Obviously, you came through at your boyhood club, Newcastle United. You then went on to play for Bolton and Aston Villa too. Is there a lot in the book, or can we expect a lot in the book about your early career?
Yeah, it's all about growing up as a kid in Wall's End in Newcastle, playing for Wall's End Boys Club, and then obviously leaving school, car accident, and then breaking into my boyhood club, Newcastle, which was a dream, you know, dream come true for me, especially what I'd been through. And then talk about Newcastle, talk about the managers I played under there, Kevin Keegan, Ozzy Ardiles, Jim Smith, and then obviously on to Bolton after that with Bruce Rioch and Colin Todd, and then Aston Villa after that before I went to Celtic. So yeah, it covers all the bases. Obviously, there's a big chunk of it that's predominantly Celtic orientated, because that was probably the most successful and happiest time in my career. So a big chunk of it's on that, but I touch all the other bases, including Leeds United at the end and Hartlepool at the end and England during it. So yeah, I cover all the bases, and then obviously the difficulties after football as well.
Yeah, obviously you didn't just play for Bolton. As you said, you won two promotions, had a really successful time there. So will it be good for the readers to get the full picture of your career reading your book?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, obviously there's a lot of Celtic fans buying it, but Bolton Wanderers as well. I've had some great times there. Played with a lot of lads who've got the same accent as you, actually, Dennis. a lot of them Scottish boys, man, I struggle to understand, including John McGinley, Andy Walker, Owen Coyle, Steve McInnesby, Stevie Fulton. So I played with a lot of the Scottish boys, so I've grown fond of the accent and got used to the accent over the years.
I was just going to get on to Owen Coyle. What is Owen Coyle like?
Considering he's one of those lads who doesn't touch a drink, he's a lively character, Coyle. he was great in the dressing room. He was great to have around in there. As most of the Scottish lads were, they were very much a bit like the Geordies, really, a bit north, you know, Scotland, and they weren't too dissimilar to each other in terms of coming from working class backgrounds, and loved their football, brought up the football, and their bubbly characters, and Coyle was certainly one of those.
How proud are you of your working class background, Alan?
Oh, I absolutely love it. I was back in Newcastle at the weekend there, and in an Irish centre in the Gallagher part of just behind St James's Gallagher end. So I love going back to Newcastle, catching up with my mates from school and stuff like that. So yeah, it's something that'll never leave me, without a doubt.
They're a great bunch at the Tyneside Celtic Supporters Club, aren't they?
Aye, they are. There was a great turnout there on Saturday night. And they were buying the books in bulk and stuff. So one lady, Lynette, who runs it down there, she bought 16. So Lynette, she's a great girl. So she bought 16. So yeah, it was a great night, and we had a great crack and a few drinks to go with it.
I've met Lynette a few times abroad. She's definitely fanatical.
Oh, she's a mad Celtic fan, but most of them are.
Absolutely. They have to be to follow that club. After playing for three huge clubs, you eventually went to Celtic just after the 6-2 game. Now, I remember the good times, but your experiences in the Glasgow Derby fixtures were mixed in the same sense that you scored 7 goals, I think, but had a few red cards. Did the players dislike each other, or was it purely the importance of the game?
Yeah, I think some players had a dislike for each other, but I think in general, on the whole, there was a lot of respect there. But obviously, there was a few players who really didn't like each other's personalities and stuff like that. I mean, there's a lot being documented about my relationship with Fernando Rixon, God rest him. And we had a lot of respect for each other, but we had a rivalry. But then there were certain players, I would say, maybe like Neil Lennon and Barry Ferguson, I really think they disliked each other. I don't think Fernando and I disliked each other. I just think we had a good rivalry on the pitch, you know. But there were certainly players. But on the whole, I think a lot of people had respect for each other. You know, Ronald De Boer lived opposite me, so Tor Andre Flo's son went to school with my son, so we used to bump into each other and stuff. So no, there was a lot of respect there.
Did you tease each other? Did you used to taunt each other?
No, not really. I mean, you would on the pitch, don't get me wrong, but you wouldn't away from the pitch. Well, I wouldn't, at least. Some of their boys might have teased me a little bit, but that's another story.
Yeah, was there anybody that you didn't like? Was there anyone you could think, do you know what, I just didn't like him, or any particular, you know,
Yeah, I didn't particularly like Amoruso. I didn't know the guy. I never met him off the pitch. I never bumped into him anywhere around Glasgow or anything like that. But I just didn't like the way he was on the pitch. I used to love the way Henrik Larsson and Chris Sutton and John Horton used to bully him, like, you know, considering he was a bit of a giant of a bloke, wasn't he? But he come across as a bit of a soft shite to me. But hey-ho.
When you signed for Celtic, were you made aware of the basic history of the club being founded with the Irish immigrants to beat the poor Irish?
I knew about it, Dennis. My mum's side of the family, the Kellys, that's my mum's name, they're Irish, so I knew the basics of it. And then obviously, as I mentioned earlier, I played with a lot of the lads who were big Celtic boys. Steve Fulton, Andy Walker, John McGinley, Owen Coyle, they were all Celtic fanatics, so I used to get the lowdown on them. And then lo and behold, not long after I joined Celtic, Alan Stubbs moved to Celtic. So Stubbs, he was a pal of mine, so I used to follow it. I used to keep in touch with him. I used to ask him how it was going. And I used to go and watch a few testimonial games. One was in particular, was at Bolton Wanderers. I might have been at Aston Villa at the time. I think it was Jimmy Phillips' testimonial, I think, if I remember correctly. And the amount of Celtic fans who were there, and then I was at Peter Beardsley's testimonial at St James's Park, Newcastle. Celtic come down for that, and it was just mind-blowing, the following that they'd bring with them, like, you know, and they just didn't show up for 90 minutes. It was thought about. And then to get the chance to go and play for them was brilliant.
That first time walking out for Celtic against Rangers at Celtic Park, jam-packed Celtic Park, what was the atmosphere like? How did you feel?
Well, my first one was at Ibrox, my first Old Firm game, but we'll not go into that one. I got a red card and we got battered. But yeah, the next one, the pressure was on us, especially after losing so heavily in the first one. So the pressure was on us as a team, and probably more in particular on me because I got the red card and we got battered at Ibrox. So, and lo and behold, I mean, the atmosphere is just, it's difficult to describe, but we went on to beat them 1-0 and I scored the winning goal. So I kind of redeemed myself a little bit. So, but I still had a lot to prove.
Besides, obviously, Henrik Larsson, who would you say is the best player you've played alongside with? Or played against?
At Celtic? Or in general?
Anyway, in general.
The best player I played alongside, I mean, Peter Beardsley would be up there. When I played with Peter at Newcastle and Bolton, he had like a computer brain. It was mind-blowing what he could see on the pitch, left foot, right foot. Peter would be up there. Lubo Moravcek at Celtic, who not a lot of people would have heard of, apart from the Celtic fans predominantly. Lubo was an exceptional talent. Again, left foot, right foot, short passing, long passing, crossing, shooting. He was just a massive talent as well, Lubo. So, and then I was fortunate over the years that when I played in the Premiership for Bolton and Villa, you're playing against the likes of Dennis Bergkamp, Patrick Vieira, Roy Keane, Paul Scholes, Steven Gerrard, Frank Lampard. Ruud Hullett, Gianfranco Zola. So the list goes on, you know, just so fortunate to play against so many great players. And then not to mention playing in Europe for Celtic, you know, playing against the likes of Ronaldinho and Xavi and Del Piero at Juventus and Nedved and people like that. I was lucky to play against and played with some great players.
After a lot of the games, players like to swap shirts. It's almost become ironic. What's the best shirt you got and how did you get it?
The best one I've got, pretty standout really, when the night we beat Barcelona 1-0 at Celtic Park, and I scored the winning goal when Didier crossed it and Henrik nodded it down and I managed to volley it in there. I got Ronaldinho's strip that night, so that's got pride of place, that one. So that's definitely my favourite one, without any shadow of a doubt.
Footballers get a lot of strange requests these days. What's the strangest request you've ever had from a fan?
Strange requests. I don't really get any strange ones. I mean, I get a lot of messages on Twitter and Instagram to send people, you know, best wishes for wedding days and anniversaries, and maybe someone's been diagnosed with something in the family and they want their best wishes message. So I don't really get any strange ones. I'm not like the David Beckhams of the world where they're going to get asked for a thong or nice pair of signed underpants or anything like that. I just get some nice messages, you know, but I try and get back to most people if I can. No, I've not really had any strange requests that I can think of off the top of my head.
You played alongside the amazing Peter Beardsley, as you already mentioned. A lot of people have to ask the obvious question. Did Peter Beardsley ever have a hairdresser at any football club who could advise him on his hair?
No, I don't think so. I think if you look at the videos, Peter in 1983 when he played for Newcastle, it'll still be the same now in 2022. he's got the same bonnet, and he just a pure basin.
Absolutely. Apart from football, is there any other sports that you enjoy, and are you any good at them?
I love my golf. I wouldn't say I'm particularly good at golf, but I love playing it. I love getting out and not looking at your phone for 4 hours and stuff like that. Cycling, I love cycling. Just got myself a new mountain bike there, so trying to get back into that. So I enjoy watching most sports, if I'm honest. Few sports that I won't watch, like cricket. I'm not really a fan of cricket, but I will watch like test matches, the Ashes and stuff like that. But most sports I'll watch. Rugby union, I like watching the rugby union. Even at the minute, the Winter Olympics, I've been watching a bit of that. There's more sports I'll follow, yeah.
How can fans get hold of your book? And is there any signed copies available?
Yeah, there'll be signed copies. I'm just speaking to Waterstones at the moment to do Waterstones in Newcastle and Waterstones in Glasgow. So those dates will be announced in the next few weeks. So I'll be in Glasgow doing that signing, Newcastle doing that signing. It's available on Amazon, War Cry Publishing. And there is signed copies available if you go through War Cry Publishing, I think, yeah.
Absolutely. What was it like when you first got the arrival of your books, when your books arrived at your doorstep and they're looking?
Well, it was great, actually, because the company, Bell & Bain, who are based in Glasgow, they were desperate to do it. So we done the contract with them for them to do it. So I went up to Glasgow and got the first one off the printer, and Steve, the CEO, and his son Ross, who run the company, were absolutely fantastic. It was a proud moment when I got the first one off the print. Yeah, it was very proud. So no, I was my mum and dad got the first one off us. It was the one of however many thousand were ordered. So my mum and dad got that one.
Did you sign it?
I signed it. To mum and dad. Yeah. But I didn't sign it, Alan Thompson. I just signed it, Alan. No, I thought.
don't go too far.
No, exactly.
Your number 8, Alan Thompson.
Aye.
It must have been a great experience for you to get the cap for England, and I know you've covered it in the book. Do you think you should have got more games, Alan?
Aye, I would love to have got more games, you know, but I just think it's a perception of what they probably, of the impression they had of Scottish football at the time and stuff like that. And it's not as if England were blessed with great left-siders at that present moment in time back then, 2003, so... I would love to have got more caps. I think I should have got more caps, but it wasn't to be. But still, as a kid growing up, you know, you've got dreams, ones to play for your boyhood club, Newcastle, which I did. I went on to do. Play at Wembley, I went on to do. for Bolton a couple of times, Villa. So, and then play for your country. So, yeah, you know, if you'd have said to me at 16 when I was in hospital with a broken neck, you're going to play for Newcastle, you're going to play at Wembley, and you're going to play for your country, I'd have snapped your hand off. So, no, I'm proud of that.
You played Liverpool the UFA Cup at Anfield, and obviously there's that free kick. Did you plan it in advance?
Yes, I certainly did. I knew the wall jumped. I know I have a laugh and a joke about it when I do a few Q&As and evenings with and stuff like that. I just have a bit of a wind-up with a punter saying, nah, well, it went under the wall, but it meant to go over. But yeah, I knew the wall jumped. And it's mental now when you watch football now, people put someone lying down behind the wall. Well, I think we first done someone lying down behind the wall was when Gordon Strachan was a manager at Celtic. Stillian Petrov used to lie behind the wall just to stop that one under the wall, but everyone's doing it now. So yeah, I knew what I was doing. I think Messi done it not long after me, but
yeah,
everyone will say he done it first.
You say you put Petrov behind the wall. Was that just for fun, or did you generally practice, or was it just so you could put
it was a tactic that when we would had a free kick against us, he lay behind the wall on the ground. So when the wall jumped, he was gonna stop the one under the wall. So no, it was a tactic that would decided on before the game.
And who chose Stan? Was it the short straw?
I think he was the thicker set of everyone, shall we say.
Speaking of Stan Petrov, one of the finest players I've ever witnessed to play football for any club, including Aston Villa and Celtic. What's he like?
Yeah, Stan's a great lad. You know, he's obviously had a tough time when he was at Villa being diagnosed with his leukemia. So he's come through it. I've seen him just before Christmas. I've seen him at a couple of gigs up in Glasgow. So great to see him. He's in great form. His kids are all grown up. His son's a goalkeeper for Solihull Moors, I think, down in Birmingham. So he's a good lad, Stan. He's a great player for us as well.
You went on to play, of course, for Leeds, and of course you finished with Hartlepool. Was it hard retiring from the game, Alan?
It didn't, looking back on it, it was hard. It wasn't hard, but at the time it was, yeah, because I was only 34. I was at Leeds, been at Leeds 18 months, and I went on loan to Hartlepool for a month, and I really enjoyed that month on loan at Hartlepool. I think I played 7 or 8 games in a month, and I just couldn't seem to do that at Leeds. I was travelling a lot from Leeds to Newcastle, up and down the motorway, and my calves just kept bailing out for some reason. Then I went to Hartlepool, who train up in Durham, not far from Newcastle, and I wasn't doing that much travelling, and I played 7 or 8 games in a month, but then Leeds called us back. Lo and behold, my calf went again, so I got a bit sick, really, of being injured and my calf's playing up. So I had a chance to go to Newcastle on the coaching staff, so I decided to do that. In hindsight, looking back on it, I maybe should have tried to get somewhere closer to Newcastle, I don't know, a Carlisle or a Hartlepool, and played another season or two.
Great having you at Carlisle United. Mm-hmm. When you retired, what were you like to be around? I could imagine, I always imagine footballers when they retire, they're a nightmare.
Well, it was bizarre because I didn't have any time off. I just went straight from playing and coaching, and I was doing the under-18s at Newcastle with an ex-player in Newcastle called Kenny Wharton. So I'd obviously just retired from playing, so Kenny loved the fact that he could coach and he could ask me to demo things and join in and just show the players, you know, how hard the players at the top level had to work to get to that level. So it was great for the under-18s at Newcastle. Some of the lads I had have gone on to do really well. It wasn't tough. I really enjoyed it.
When you worked alongside Lenny, you obviously witnessed the darker side of Scottish football on a regular basis. I remember especially the Hearts incident. What was it like for the players and management alike?
I think the players were okay. I think the players just get on with it. They only read what the punters are reading in the papers and stuff. But I think we seen how much it affected Lenny behind the scenes, and we had to be his support system. So myself, Johan Mialbi, Gary Parker, probably the board as well, they had to, and the medical team as well, because Lenny suffered mentally as well, you know. So it was a tough time, but he had a strong group around him.
Yeah, it seemed to me like when you watch it from the sidelines, I always look back at the incident at Hearts when the idiot ran on the pitch. It seems that you've got your close friends who you can rely on you, and you were one of the first person up there, Alan. But I always think to myself, and just off the record, it must have been for yourself quite frightening to be encroached suddenly in an area by an idiot.
Aye, it is. Of course it is. But Once it all settles down, we got on the bus after the game outside the ground at Tynecastle, and I started taking the piss out of Lenny, saying, "You didn't even see him coming, did you?" So I was winding him up that I had better vision than him, you know. So I seen him coming from the left, whereas Lenny didn't, so I managed to get a hold of him. But now, if that happened in the street, it would probably end up in a big brawl, wouldn't it? But that shouldn't happen in football stadiums, that's for sure.
What happened? What happened between Alan McCoyston, Lenny, and yourself? You were playing peacemaker, Alan.
I know. I must have matured over the years, eh? They had words about whose team it was and stuff like that, but it goes into more detail in the book. But it wasn't an awful lot. It was just, it's the hype of the old firm. It doesn't take much to light the fuse, and it was a bit of handbags, really.
Do you still follow Bolton? Do you keep an eye on the results? Recently won 5-0, of course.
Yeah, I think they beat Sunderland 6-0 a few weeks ago.
6-0, so, 6-0, that was it. Yeah,
6-0, yeah. And I keep an eye on Bolton. I live not far from there as well. So I keep an eye on all my old team's results, yeah.
You played for Walton Football Club, one of the famous clubs. But can you name three other players who went on to have very successful careers and also represent England?
What, from Walsend Boys Club?
Yeah.
I think there's only four who went on to play for England. One, obviously, who spoke about myself. Alan Shearer.
Yep.
Peter Beardsley.
Yep.
Michael Carrick.
Yeah, that's correct. That's right.
You could possibly put Fraser Forster in that bracket.
Because
Fraser had a short spell at Wallsend Boys Club when he was a kid as well, but he was too busy getting privately educated to play for Wallsend Boys Club.
I was going to talk, you know, looking at Alan Shearer, what's your view on Alan Shearer as a player at Newcastle?
Sorry, what was that, Dennis?
How do you rate Alan Shearer as a player at Newcastle United?
Listen, anyone who's the all-time leading goal scorer in the Premier League, exceptional. So he played in a great team. He got great service, but he could score any kind of goal, Alan. Any kind of goal, left foot, right foot, side foot, top of the foot, volleys, half volleys. Oh, he could score any kind of goal. And he was exceptional. And you think over the years as well, a little bit like Henrik, they had serious injuries as well. So it just shows you how mentally tough they are as well to come back from the serious injuries they had. You think of Alan and Chris Sutton at Blackburn together when they were a bit younger and a bit faster. They were unstoppable, the two of them. And just absolute world-class centre-forward.
Martin O'Neill once described Henrik Larsson as one of the most hardest working players he'd ever met. Is that correct?
Yeah, Henrik, without a doubt. Henrik was, as well as being a fantastically, you know, talented individual, he was 100% team player as well. You knew when you went on the pitch, you were going to get everything out of Henrik. When he comes off the pitch, you know he's going to be knackered, he's going to be drained, because he works his socks off for the team and he deserves all the plaudits that he got.
What was it like for Seville? What was it like in Seville for you?
Listen, it was a great run to get there. We had some fantastic results and memories along the line, but we fell short just at the final hurdle. We give it our all. You go down to 10 men in that heat against a good Porto team, a referee who might have not been on our side, but I don't know. Who knows what might have happened? It's nearly 20 years, can you believe, since that now? Next year, it'll be 20
next
years.
Year.
The boys are on about getting back together for it, and no doubt we'll be talking about, you know, a few of the memories along the way. But a great occasion. It was a pleasure to be a part of, without a doubt.
What's your biggest regret, Alan?
I haven't really got any, if I'm honest. I mean, the one I mentioned it before there. I think one of the biggest ones was probably retiring from playing at 34. Maybe should have gone on to 35, 36, maybe even 37. So I haven't really got any regrets, if I'm honest. But looking back, I do think now and again, maybe could I have gone on for a couple more years? That would be the only real one, really.
And if you had a message for the fans of Celtic just now who followed you, what would you say?
What about the current day?
About the current?
Yeah, I think it's looking great. I watched the Rangers game last week and I just thought that's as good as I've seen a Celtic team play in a long time, the first half against Rangers last week. Andrew got them playing with energy. I know they've got one or two players out at the minute as well, but then they backed the old firm game up with a win at the weekend there. So it's all looking positive. They're back sitting on top of the league. The goal difference has 10 or 11 higher than Rangers, I think. So it's looking really positive. They've just got to keep that momentum now and get back to winning titles, which is, I'm sure that's what Ange wants to do. And he started off brilliantly. I know Celtic fans, who I know personally, friends of mine, are extremely happy with him and they're in love with him already. So hopefully Ange can go on to join the Celtic greats, you know, your Martin O'Neills and your Jock Steens.
And in closing, Alan, I always ask this of all my guests. If you were trapped in an elevator, who would you least likely or least want to be trapped in an elevator with? And why?
Who would I want to be trapped in a lift with?
You can pick anyone. Doesn't even have to be football. You know, it could be anyone. For me, you know, I could think of loads of people. I mean, my wife, my mum.
I might be my ex-wife. No, I don't know. I don't dislike many people, if I'm honest. So I'm quite easy going. But it's difficult. I mean, I wouldn't want to be trapped in the lift with Bobo Baldi, that's for sure. Because there wouldn't be much room for me to move about.
He's a big boy.
He's a big lad, Bobo. But he's another one who was great to be in the dressing room with. So I had a good time.
Well, Alan, look, in closing, what advice would you give to youngsters today trying to make out? What's your best advice you give to young players today trying to make the way in the game?
Youngsters, I just think they've got to enjoy the football. They've got to play for as many teams as they possibly can, touch the ball as many times as you can, practice, you know, as often as you can. But basically, just play with a smile on your face and enjoy it. And hopefully, one day you might get an opportunity to play in front of big crowds and that takes some beating.
Well, Alan, it's been an absolute pleasure. Obviously, tell us again, it's a Geordie Boy. Where's it available and how do we get it?
A Geordie Boy, and it's on Amazon. It'll be in Waterstones in Glasgow and Newcastle, Warcry Publishing's website. So it's a good read, and it's from the heart, and it's not just about football, it's about other stuff as well, outside away from the game. So it's good for football fans, but it's good for people who've possibly struggled along the way with mental health problems and stuff like that. So it's interesting.
It's a great football read. And Alan, where can we catch you next? Which event can we catch up with you next?
Next, I'm up in Glasgow, I think on the 27th of March in Malone's, an evening with Paul Lambert and myself. Then I'm up at an event on April the 1st in Stirling. And then I'm on about trying to get some dates nailed down to go around Ireland in May, April or May. So I would look forward to go to Derry and Belfast, Cork and Dublin, places like that. So hopefully there'll be some announcements coming out.
So if they follow you on social media, obviously they can get details how to get tickets to these events, or is there someone in particular that can go to get all the details?
Absolutely. If they just follow on Twitter or mainly Twitter, yeah. So yeah, there'll be announcements on there.
Alan, thank you very much. Have a lovely, lovely evening, and it was a pleasure talking to you.
All right. Cheers, Dennis. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Cheers, pal.
Hi. I'm Dennis Devlin, the host of Proscast, the voice of Cross International. Join me and our reporters as we bring you the biggest interviews and breaking news headlines from across the world of sport, including football, rugby, cricket, tennis, and much, much more. That's Proscast with me, Dennis Devlin, the voice of Cross International. Cross International, the world's game open to all.
Well, that was a great interview there with Alan Thompson. I hope he's doing well. Great career, very interesting character. And of course, his book, A Geordie Boy, is out now and available on Amazon. Well, we'll crack on. It is, of course, Proscast with me, Dennis Devlin. And waiting quietly in the background has been Kieran. Kieran Gallup is one of Cross International's fantastic journalists. Kieran, what have you got lined up for us tonight?
Hi, Dennis. Yeah, thanks for having me on. Well, today we've got some National League action to bring you, as well as a preview to the FA Cup fourth round proper, including some of those non-league sides. And then later on, I'm going to talk about the rugby union and namely the Six Nations as well, which is coming up. Of course, that's starting this weekend. Also talking about rugby league, where the Super League season will be starting in just a couple of weeks' time. And also the championship season got started the weekend just gone. And lastly, a big domestic boxing fight coming up this weekend as Chris Eubank Jr. takes on Liam Williams.
Wow, that's been just... Let's kick it all off with, of course, a little bit of the Northern League action. Kieran, what's been happening?
Thank you very much. Yes, well, going into the National League at the weekend, we'll start in North London with Barnet against Stockport County. It finished Barnet 0, Stockport County 5. And quite remarkably in this game, actually, three of the Stockport goals all came from set pieces and further fourth came from a simple cross. So maybe enforcing some stereotypes about National League football there. But a huge win for Stockport County. They go top of the league with that win. Boreham Wood keeping up in the race with a 3-1 win over Kings Lynn Town. Of course, they did pick up a disappointing draw at home to struggling Weymouth, and possibly fans worrying about the same thing happening again as they went 1-0 down to Kings Lynn. But goals from Josh Rees and Tyrone Marsh gave them the victory there. Bromley continuing their excellent form, maybe punching a little bit above their weight, some would say. They beat Knox County and they're in fourth place, right up there in the mix. FC Halifax Town went to East London and got a huge win at Dagenham and Redbridge. 3-1. They see themselves right in the mix as they are in third place. It's all very tight up there at the minute. Dover Athletic, of course, it's a sad story, Dover. They've had a terrible time, but they did manage to pick up their first victory of the season over Eastleigh just over a week ago. This weekend just gone, though, they did lose 1-0 at home to Southend United, who have really come on leaps and bounds since a terrible, terrible start to their season. And they'll be looking to build to what they will hope will be a promotion campaign next season. Grimsby Town edged past Wealdstone at Blundell Park. 2 goals from Michy Efete. A little bit outside of the playoff battle are Grimsby Town at the minute, which some people may be surprised by. But if they can build a run together, then they've certainly still got a chance there. Solihull Moors, 5-0 against Altrincham. Unbelievably, they have scored 12 goals in their last 3 games in the National League. 2-5-0 home victories against Dover and Altrincham. And Andrew Dallas, it's quite an interesting one, this one, actually. He joined the club from the beginning of the season from Cambridge United. Didn't have the greatest of starts. And then about a week ago, actually, he played against Dover Athletic. They won 5-0 and he scored all 5 goals in that game. Then to go on to score another goal against Torquay United and another 2 against Altrincham. All of a sudden, what seemed like a mediocre season is starting to look like an excellent season for the Scotsman there, which is fantastic. We move on then to struggling Weymouth, who lost 1-0 at home to Aldershot Town. It's a disappointing one for Weymouth, really, because it's these home games against those kind of lower mid-table sides that they'll be looking to get 3 points from if they are to get themselves out of the situation early.
They'll be essential, wouldn't they, Kieran? They're essential results, and they need to win these games, these home games against, I suppose, opposition from round about the same position they're in.
Exactly that. And it would have been even more heartbreaking, the fact that it was a 92nd-minute own goal that cost them that game there from Brandon Goodship, the unlucky party there. And we move on to Woking against Yeovil Town. Big 1-0 win for Yeovil Town there, who are still sniffing around just below the playoffs. They've got a 10-point buffer to try and make up, but a good win in Surrey for them, courtesy of a goal from Charlie Wakefield. We then move on to Wrexham, of course. Everybody knows about the Wrexham story. They're spending a lot of money. They've got the Hollywood owners. It's a big story at the minute. However, they couldn't overcome the might of Maidenhead United at home. They drew 1-1 in the end. Paul Mullin, their big sign-in from the summer, got sent off in the 4th minute. And they did actually go ahead thanks to a goal from Aaron Hayden. However, a 92nd-minute equaliser from Maidenhead United left Wrexham fans rather disappointed with that one. And then lastly, the 5:20 p.m. kickoff, which was live on BT Sport, Eastleigh against Chesterfield, a relatively dull game in all, made rather interesting with a 89th-minute Curtis Weston winner who Curtis Weston with a absolute screamer in that game. If you haven't checked that one out, I suggest that you do. It's a fabulous goal from the veteran. And that was the National League action from the weekend. There was a couple of games yesterday as well, I should add. Southend United beat Barnet by 2-1. Southend continuing their excellent form. Barnet are struggling a little bit, but they do have that buffer ahead of the teams in the relegation zone. And a big point for Weymouth away at Yeovil Town as well. They did actually take the lead in that game. Sean Shields, easy for me to say, with the goal there. And Adi Youssef as well, getting an equaliser for Yeovil Town there. So that was all of the National League action. Some fantastic games there. Plenty of goals, as always, with the National League. And now we're heading into, of course, the FA Cup fourth round proper. And it's maybe unusual for us to be talking about non-league sides this far into the competition, but it's been fantastic to see them doing so well so far.
It has. It's been an interesting... I mean, so far, the FA Cup has certainly thrown up some surprises. I just want to talk quickly about the National League. It's been a bit of a topsy-turvy season for Halifax and Grimsby just now. I mean, Halifax at one point was sitting top of the league, you know, and they seem to have drifted away. And Grimsby, it's kind of... I mean, the results are kind of up and down. It must be a little bit concerning for the fans, you'd think.
Yeah, definitely. I think particularly the Grimsby story is an interesting one, obviously. One promotion back to the Football League a few years ago. You felt like they might may kick on. Of course, we've seen a number of teams who get promoted from the National League often go on to kick on and actually get promoted again. They struggled a little bit in the end and actually ended up getting relegated again. You would have expected they would have been right up there with your Stockport counties and your Chesterfields this season. It hasn't quite happened for them. They are 12 points off the top of the table as things stand. With 25 games played, they are currently 6 points off of the playoffs as well. It's been a disappointing one, and I think it was epitomised actually by a result on the 22nd. They faced Bromley at home, and it was a gutting 2-1 win, 2-1 defeat, sorry, I should say, for them there. And Bromley, as such, actually moved themselves into the playoffs with that game. And it's been a disappointing one. FC Halifax, of course, is another interesting story. They're surrounded by massive clubs with a lot of backing, and they had obviously had an amazing start to the season. It has tailed off a little bit with some disappointing results. Obviously, they lost that key game at home to Boreham Wood. That was after losing away at Maidenhead United. They are still right in the mix, though, only a point off of top Stockport County. It's amazing, really. It's 6 points separating the top seven, so it really is anyone's game.
It is very exciting right now. I mean, Stockport are flying. I mean, the banging goals are for fun just now.
Absolutely, yeah, 100%. They really are. And we saw that at Barnet 5-0. And their recent results, actually, you look at it, 5-1, 4-1, 3-0, a couple of 3-0s there.
Over 20 goals. Unbelievable. Over 20 goals in the past couple of games. It's amazing. And they're not really conceding many either, which is, I mean, if you're pushing for promotion, that's what you want. You want to score the goals and not concede. And they're beating the teams around them as well, which if anybody knows promotion, that's what you need to do. You need to beat those around you. But they're able to go to them grounds that are difficult. They're able to go there and grind out results. And that's always a sign of good champions. I'm going to put you in the spot, Kieran. Who do you see winning the league? I'm going to say Stockport. I think Stockport and Halifax, I still think they've got enough about them, and I think Stockport and Halifax will go up.
That's an interesting one, really. I think Stockport, of course, they're a big club. They spent a long time in the National League North, and having been promoted just a couple of seasons ago, they've really motored through the league relatively quickly, and they're looking for a return to the Football League after a long time out. They're looking good at the minute, I must say, especially with the amount of goals they're scoring. I wouldn't discount Chesterfield. Of course, when you've got a player like Shimanga that Chesterfield do have, you've always got a chance, I would say. And Chesterfield equally, of course, looking for a return to the Football League after a few years out. I'm actually going to go out and maybe oppose what you said a little bit. I'm going to say Chesterfield will win the league. But I will say Stockport will go up from the playoffs. I think they have enough to go up this season, Stockport County.
Ooh, interesting. Interesting. And of course, it's FA Cup time. And Nord League is represented well again, aren't they, Kieran?
Absolutely, yes. I think the tie of the round, everyone can agree, is Kidderminster Harriers against West Ham United.
Absolutely.
Such a huge tie. I mean, these are the sorts of ties that epitomise the magic of the FA Cup, I would say. Third in the National League North, taking on fifth place in the Premier League, is what it's all about, really. What I actually found really interesting was going through Kidderminster's path to the fourth round now. So their first game was in the second qualifying round away to Sporting Kousa. They won that 3-1 in front of 687 people. They've gone on to have to play a replay against Ware from the eighth tier in the third qualifying round. Bedfont Sports, they beat in the fourth qualifying round before, of course, that game against Grimsby Town, which was a bit of an upset in itself. Grimsby Town from the National League in the first round. They got through that one. And then Halifax Town as well. Two very good National League sides they've beaten at home there. And then, of course, the one everyone remembers is the game against Reading. You know, you can maybe make an argument about the situation Reading are in at the minute, but it was a strong team from Reading few youngsters, admittedly. But for Kidderminster Harriers to get the victory there, it was in front of over 5,000 people as well, I might add. It's just a fantastic story. And, of course, West Ham doing so well in the Premier League at the minute. It's just a tie for the ages.
It is. I mean, it's a tight ground to go to as well. It's certainly not easy to go to Kidderminster and expect to run them over. I mean, I have a suspicious feeling that West Ham will maybe hold a few back. And it's all about that decision the manager makes. Does he put in all his stars, go there and turn them over? Or does he hold back? Because it's going to be tight and it's got all the, you know, you can just imagine the atmosphere of that crowd. I believe it'll be live on BBC, I believe, is it?
I believe so, yeah.
Oh, it'd be an exceptional. Definitely tie of the round, definitely. What else can we expect in the FA Cup, Kieran?
Well, Boreham Wood, of course. And maybe this tie is slightly overlooked due to the Kidderminster tie. They travel to the Vitality Stadium to take on AFC Bournemouth, of course, who have had an unbelievable January transfer window, may I add, bringing in the likes of Todd Cantwell from Norwich. They've made a real statement of intent that they're going to get promoted from the Championship this season. So it'd be interesting, actually, and in this case as well, to see how Scott Parker addresses this game and what team he puts out. Boreham Wood, their route to the fourth round, they beat AFC Wimbledon in the previous round. That was probably their biggest win. 2-0 victory over their London rivals. And then in the second round, they beat St Albans City in a bit of a local derby. And in the first round, they beat National League Eastleigh. So they've maybe had a slightly kinder route to the fourth round. But like I said, that win over Wimbledon was excellent. And listen, they're a very, very good side at the minute, Bournemouth.
Absolutely.
And I wouldn't count them out.
I can see that being a draw. I can see that. I can see them getting a draw, pinching a draw at the Vitality and taking them back. And I actually think they can beat them back home. I really do. I just think they've got enough about them, enough experience, and I'm not convinced that Parker will necessarily want, you know, to put his strongest squad out there. I think the concentration from Bournemouth right now is returning to the top flight.
100%, yeah. I would completely agree with that. I think Bournemouth's main aim is simply to get out of the Championship. Of course, they spent quite a lot of money to survive. Absolutely. In the Premier League, which of course didn't happen when they were relegated under Eddie Howe. They've also spent a little bit of money to get out of the Premier League again, out of the Championship, I should say, again. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there are a few youngsters possibly thrown in there, or a few fringe players. And of course, that gives Bournemouth every chance.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it should be a fantastic tie.
And I certainly wouldn't fancy a Tuesday night or Wednesday night down at Boreham in the pouring rain. I don't see many Bournemouth.
It's a very, very open ground, Meadow Park. It's a very open ground. Yeah.
A bit of wind and a bit of rain will have a classic FA Cup replay. They're the ones. Absolutely. I like. Carry on, Kim. Sorry. FA Cup, it excites me. I mean, as a Scotsman, you'd think I would not be that interested, but I love the history of the FA Cup. I love the opportunity for these giant killings, and I get very passionate about it. I thoroughly enjoy it, and it's a great competition. It is, of course, the oldest competition in cup competition in the world. So, well, that's argumented. Some folk in Scotland will say the Scottish Cup's just as old. We're not going to that argument, but it is a great competition, Gary, without a shadow of doubt, with some amazing ties coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think what's been fantastic to see as well is that I've seen a lot of clubs reducing ticket prices quite significantly to get as many people in. Because what I think we found over the years is some slightly dwindling attendances in the early rounds of the FA Cup. And it doesn't make for great viewing when you see half empty stadiums and things like that. And I'm gonna maybe go on the mantelpiece and talk about my own club a little bit for a second, Southampton, who have reduced their ticket prices. They're playing Coventry City at home, a championship side. And by the way, credit to the Sky Blues. They've sold out 5,000 tickets to go into the away end for that game.
Really?
The game is entirely sold out. There'll be 32,000 people packed into St. Mary's for FA Cup fourth round action. So that's going to be fantastic. I've been really impressed with some of the clubs that have been doing that. And also, there's a big tie for Plymouth Argyle. They've got a fantastic trip to Chelsea. And also, one that might not get talked about as much, Hartlepool United, who, of course, have recently been promoted back to the Football League. They travelled to Selhurst Park to take on Crystal Palace. So some excellent ties.
That will be an interesting game. That they're doing well, Hartlepool, just now. And they're a tough nut to crack.
100%, yeah. And, of course, they beat Blackpool in the previous round as well. That was a good win. So, they'll go there with all the confidence in the world that they can pull off a shock. So why not?
Absolutely. And funding-wise, I mean, for some of these smaller clubs, it makes and breaks a season for them, you know. Yeah, the money you can make out of ticket sales, is, I mean, going to Vitality Stadium, full lights to Vitality, even for Coventry, let's put Coventry going to Southampton. Even though ticket prices are just, Coventry need the money just now. It's a great amount of money they'll make out of that, and it can only be beneficial for the club.
Absolutely, yeah. And as I say, I mean, we go back to the ties for the non-league sides. I mean, Kidderminster at home to West Ham. You think of the not just the money they're going to get from ticket sales, but from the TV coverage, everything that comes along with it. It's and even just a bit of exposure, I would say, it's massive for the club. And you know, that's what the FA Cup is all about. Absolutely. Of course, it's all about winning, but it's also all about getting exposure for these maybe smaller clubs, lower down the pyramid, getting fans into these games. And the spirit of the FA Cup is what it's all about.
Absolutely. And of course, a player can make himself a hero. Plus, it puts them on the transfer market. People can recognise there can be players down in them non-leagues that are, banging them in at outstanding. Suddenly, you scored against West Ham, you have a great game, and next thing you know, your agent's on the... I mean, agents, speaking of agents, I mean, I don't know if you saw the documentary with Macclesfield with Robbie Savage. I don't know if you saw that documentary, but Robbie Savage talking about agents demanding 50 quid for their player and the agent takes a fiver. It's gone crazy down in the non-leagues, hasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I must admit, I haven't seen the documentary, but it is crazy. I mean, I've seen stories of sort of players down in the eighth tier having agents now. That's the way the game's developed now. There are players right down the pyramid with agents, and agents demanding fees and things like that. It's crazy, yeah.
It was just the way Robbie Stavish put it. He said, I'm paying 50 quid to the player and I've got to pay a fiver to the agent. I mean, the agent's actually going to take a fiver off me.
Absolutely.
He went into his pocket to pull it.
If you
change.
Don't mind, yep. I think I'd like to move on to the Six Nations Rugby Union,
yes,
if you don't mind.
Yes, we're about to kick off, aren't we?
Absolutely. Of course, the Six Nations is a huge tournament. Happens every year. But what I really like about this Six Nations is that, you know, as much as they may not like me saying this, maybe bar the Italians, I would say every side has a real shot this year. I don't think any side is particularly imperious or flawless. Every side has chinks in their armor, but I think each team has a real opportunity of going and do something this tournament, and that makes for fantastic viewing.
It does, yeah. And Scotland have got England as well at Murrayfield.
I believe so, yeah. And of course, the Calcutta Cup always brings some some fantastic atmospheres and some fantastic games. And you've actually had a little bit more success in recent games, I'm sure you'll be keen to point out as well. So, yeah, absolutely. I think looking at the England side, they're going to be without Owen Farrell. That's a big loss, of course. And then you look at the sort of chalk and cheese of winning the 2020 Six Nations after their fabulous run in the World Cup to finishing fifth in 2021. It's amazing how it can just flip like that. They'll, of course, be keen to put that right. Wales, of course, the defending champions, and they've got some really, really exciting young players, I think. And the one that really stands out for me is Lewis Rhys-Zammit. He is a fantastic player. He's broken through in the last couple of years. But they've also got established internationals such as Liam Williams still on the team. So they are definitely a force to be reckoned with. And Scotland as well, of course. You know, it's an interesting one, Scotland, because they've made so many improvements over the last sort of 6 or 7 years. They've come on absolutely leaps and bounds. I mean, I think back to the game in the 2015 World Cup against Australia, where you were so, so close in the quarterfinal. Scotland, that just showed how far they had come. Despite the on-field improvements, though, it's possibly interesting to see that Scotland have failed to finish above fourth in four out of the last five tournaments, as I said, despite the on-field improvements. But I think that is more so down to how tight the competition has been.
Absolutely.
Ireland, of course, you know, you cannot discount them. They have a habit in these tournaments where there's not sort of a standout favourite of stepping up and winning. They haven't won since 2018, though. But what I also found interesting, actually, was the rankings. This shows how tight it is. Of course, Italy's slightly down the rankings, but you've got England, Ireland, France, Wales and Scotland are all ranked 3rd, 4th, 5th, 7th and 8th in the world.
Wow.
That just shows how tight this competition is really going to be. And I would also like to talk actually about France, who, like Scotland actually, possibly more recently, have come on leaps and bounds. Of course, they were a former powerhouse in rugby.
Definitely.
Just over sort of the mid-2010s, I found that a lack of physical and in-game discipline saw them fall way, way behind the rest of the teams. You know, we saw fitness issues. We saw, like I said, a lack of discipline. But they've improved that massively, and they've come on leaps and bounds. They finished second in the previous tournament. They'll be looking for a long-awaited Six Nations win, I think, for France.
Definitely. They've invested heavily as well, the French. The French have invested heavily in their youth as well over the past couple of years. They've spent a lot of money, the same as Scotland, trying to improve the direction of youth into rugby.
Absolutely, I wonder, yeah.
What one of you can... How do you think England will approach the Scotland game?
It's a difficult one. I think, when you've got such an intense atmosphere in these games, it can be difficult to block that out. But I think England, if they play their game, I think they have more quality than Scotland. Scotland will try and make it rough. They'll try and make it tough. They'll be, like I said, they'll be tough at the breakdown and in the scrummages as well. They'll try and make it a war. England will look to play their game. And if they can execute that, of course, conditions play a big part as well. You know, it's all very well and good zipping the ball about, but if it's windy and if it's rainy, it can be very difficult to execute that sort of game. So I think conditions play a big part as well. But yeah, absolutely, I think it'll be very interesting to see how England approach it. But I think they'll look to stick to their game and not get dragged into the game that Scotland won, I would say.
Yeah. I would say Scotland will look to make it a war, a battle. You know, they'll want to get the heads down. And I think it comes down to a little bit of pride, passion, and who wants it the most? Who wants this the most? And and using that atmosphere, that Murrayfield crowd, that's like an extra man for Scotland. And they'll need it. They will need it because technically England are way ahead. I agree with that. But it's all about who wants it the most, Kieran, on that day.
Absolutely. And you look at the games that Scotland have either come close in or actually won. every one of those games has been a real war. You know, again, conditions could come into it, but maybe not so much attacking flair in these sorts of games, just getting down, getting dirty, and really go into battle. And like you say, it's about who wants it more. And I think that would certainly suit Scotland if the game panned out that way.
Who are you going to predict? Who do you think will take there? Let's look at Scotland first. You're going to go for England, I'm guessing.
I'm not sure. Like I said, the 2021 tournament was a real disappointment. I'm going to go for Wales to defend their title. And I just think that, like I said, every team has some chinks in their armour. But I think the combination of the young talent that Wales have, along with the experienced players, you know, they've obviously still got their Liam Williams, Alex Cuthberts, players like that. I think that's the sort of team that is gonna prevail in this tournament. I think, you know, Ireland are definitely in with a shout as well. It's difficult because for Scotland, I think they play well enough in often 2-3, sometimes even 4 games to go on and win the tournament. It's a case of executing in every single game for Scotland. If I had to pick, I would probably say Wales to defend their title.
I'm going to put my... You know what? I'm going to say mad here. I have a suspicious feeling. I just have this feeling that Wales are the favourites. Okay, I get that. But I'm going to put my head and say France. I think France are going to surprise everyone. I really do. I really think France are going to nip this. I think they're going to really play really well, but I think they want it. I think they want it. The country wants it. They've got a lot of belief. They've invested heavily. And I'm not necessarily saying they've got the skill level at England and maybe Wales, but I just think they're going to have a surprise package. And I'm going to put my neck on the line and I'm going to say, I think France, and everyone's laughing. I know they're laughing, crazy Scotsman. I also think Scotland will edge England at Murrayfield. I think it'll be close. But I think Scotland will just edge them.
I could certainly see that. Obviously the gap between Scotland and England isn't what it has been over the years, which means that when you add into that the Murrayfield atmosphere and everything that comes with that, and everything the Calcutta Cup means, I think I could definitely see Scotland winning that game. And as for the French, of course, I think it's obviously, they're building towards their home World Cup. If they can get a Six Nations win in before that, you can imagine the support that they're going to have for that home World
Cup.
So they'll definitely be desperate to get a Six Nations win in before that tournament, I would say. And just briefly, actually touching on the Italians, I know they kind of get left out of these sorts of conversations. Yeah, I think It's a sad story, really, because I grew up obviously watching the Italian sides with obviously Sergio Parisse, who is an absolute warrior. He was everything that Italian rugby represented, and you saw the improvements. I did see the improvements over quite a few years. You know, they would pick up a victory more often than not. Particularly when they were at home, the Italians would really get behind them. I just think they've taken a few backward steps again, unfortunately, and possibly that could be down to having no leader like Sergio Parisse. Obviously, without Parisse, is it that lack of leadership? You know, they've got a young side, and I just think, you know, you saw obviously as well over the years with the Pro 14, Benetton Treviso and Zebre, they certainly improved quite a lot, quite dramatically. They were winning a number of games and sort of finishing mid-table, which was fantastic. They've kind of gone backwards now as well, and I think it's a sad story. But again, like you said about being a waste of time, obviously there's been the conversation for quite a little while about whether it should be Georgia playing in the Six Nations over Italy or whether it should just revert to the Five Nations. I'm on the viewpoint of I enjoy seeing sort of more teams involved. And particularly for trying to develop the sport in these countries. However, it does seem a bit like a lost cause for Italy at the minute. So I would be interested to see Georgia in the tournament. But again, would it just be the same story? I don't know.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of talk about it, and we could talk forever about it. Some people want to revert back to five. Some folk want to increase it and include Italy and Georgia. Some folk don't want Italy and would prefer Georgia. Me personally, I like it the way it is just now, and I do like seeing the Italians. And there's nothing better than watching the Italians at home. You know, the atmosphere they create there sometimes is
100%.
immense.
100%, yeah. I completely agree with that. Although they may not bring an awful lot to the tournament in terms of quality, what they do bring is passion, obviously, especially when they're at home. And even if they don't go on to win the game, if you see Italy run a team close, the atmosphere is just fantastic. And I really do think it adds something to the tournament. So I would be in agreement with you there.
Yeah, and let's be honest, it's a great away day, isn't it? It's a great place to go to go.
I haven't had the pleasure of going to Italy and to Rome as of yet, but yeah, it's a beautiful country, and like I say, people don't realize that they are passionate about that rugby there, so
Oh,
it'll be
definitely.
good to see. Taking it, switching codes actually, I think moving maybe on to the rugby league, of course, Super League, which begins in just a couple of weeks' time, and of course, it's a big year for rugby league. We've got the delayed World Cup at the end of the year,
That's right.
and all of the implications of COVID and the reasons that Australia and New Zealand refused to participate last year. If the COVID situation doesn't improve fast, will Australia and New Zealand be there? It's an interesting one with the World Cup. But as for the Super League, I think you've got St. Helens who have just looked as good as ever, I think, particularly last year, winning the Super League and Challenge Cup double. That was something that they often struggled to do, was oftentimes in the Challenge Cup, they would get knocked out at, or if they won the Challenge Cup, they weren't challenging in the Super League.
Yeah.
But they did win the double last year. I think Warrington, of course, under Darryl Powell, I think they could be right up there. There's a going saying that it's Y's year every year, but Warrington I think could be a really key, a key player in the Super League this year and the Challenge Cup. Wigan, of course, disappointing last year to an extent, but they've got Sean Wayne back at the club as a managerial director, slightly different role for the England coach, but possibly they could be set for a revival. And Leeds Rhinos, of course, had a disappointing couple of years, looking to build on some promising signs from last year. And I think actually what will be interesting is to see how Toulouse will fare. Obviously, already one French team in a tournament in Catalan. To have a second in the tournament, it is interesting. Obviously, we saw with the experiment, if you like, of Toronto Wolfpack, that didn't work. Toulouse is obviously far more realistic. But
Yeah.
it'll be interesting to see if they're here to stay, and really how they'll compete. I had the pleasure of watching them last season in the championship. They were far, far too good for the championship.
Absolutely.
They were an excellent, excellent side to watch. So it will be really, really interesting to see how they fare in the Super League this year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to lose in Catalan. That'll be an interesting game.
That will be a very, very interesting game, and it'll be
That
the
will be passionate.
first game of the sorts. Absolutely, yeah, first game of the sorts. It'll be very, very passionate, that game. It'll also be interesting, actually, I think, to see how the sort of the public in Toulouse take to rugby league, take to the Super League. We've seen Catalan; they can have some incredibly passionate fans when they want to, and I think Toulouse again. It'll be interesting to see how the fans take to the game over there.
Absolutely, something to look forward to. That definitely, I do like the rugby league season.
100%, yeah, and as I said, the Rugby League World Cup later this year,
Oh yeah.
in England as well. That'll be fantastic. Of course, me being a southerner, I'm a long way away from the heartland, if you like. There'll be a lot of games up there. But for anyone living in that area, it's just fantastic. There's so many games wherever you look.
It is. It's, I mean, for England in general, you got the Commonwealth Games coming up as well. You know, it's
Exactly.
outstanding just now for sport just now. But the Rugby World Cup coming home to where it belongs, it's going to be awesome. You just know
it's going to be fantastic. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, obviously we had the Rugby Union World Cup back in 2015. We held the Rugby League World Cup as well in 2013 as well. So to hold it again is fantastic. And as you say, to have the Commonwealth Games and the Rugby League World Cup in the same year is just fantastic for the country. It's just fantastic overall for the public to be able to go to both of these events. Huge sporting events. And it's a fantastic opportunity to go and watch it.
Absolutely. And of course, a championship.
Yes, the championship, of course, started this weekend. I was at the London Broncos Widnes Vikings game. And I'm going to start with the London Broncos, actually, because it's an interesting story. London Broncos were playing at the Ealing Trailfinders Sports Ground for quite a number of years. In the 2019 season, they played in the Super League. They did really, really well. And they were agonizingly close to staying up. They won 10 games and still got relegated. That was on points difference. And I think that really hurt them financially, as well as COVID, of course, which has a big impact. And, you know, you see the crowds that they had in the championship after COVID. They were getting crowds of 200, 300, which, of course, just isn't enough. And it was they've had to revert back to part-time, one of only three part-time teams in the league, along with Barrow and Workington. It just seems like it's the club themselves have actually said, have gone out and said that this is a temporary switch, but I feel like the you switch to part-time, results on the pitch are going to suffer. And if results on the pitch are going to suffer, people aren't going to come. I do think, though, obviously the move to the Cherry Red Record Stadium, home of Wimbledon, I think that will be enough to be enough of a draw to get the fans in. I mean, the Widnes game, there was just over 2,000 there. But if they start losing week in, week out, you'll see those numbers dwindle. So I do fear a little bit, actually, for the London Broncos.
Yeah, it's a frightening time, and obviously COVID had a massive impact on them, as it did a lot of clubs. I mean, there was a lot of talk of clubs in both Union and the League, low league teams disappearing. You know, I spoke to a gentleman, his biggest concern was how some of the biggest clubs that were in the lower leagues could disappear, you know, because COVID had that big an impact.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, you talk about the Rugby League in particular. Even at Super League level, you know, there's not as much money in the game as you would potentially think, particularly in comparison maybe to the NRL. But in the Championship, you're not looking at huge amounts of money. You're not looking at massively rich clubs here. So COVID can really affect them. And it was obviously sad to see. But as I said, the Championship season kicked off at the weekend, and we said about the London Broncos. It was a big win for Widnes, though, 34-12 on the opening day. They're a side who got relegated from the Super League in 2018, haven't really challenged to return since. They'll be hoping that changes this season. I think there are a couple of standout favourites, though, I would say, to get promoted. And that's firstly Lee Centurions, of course. They were, after Toronto Wolfpack were essentially liquidated, they were elected to go into the Super League for having essentially the best facilities to hold Super League rugby. And they struggled, as potentially expected. They've come back down, but with Adrian Lamb at the helm, they've got a really good chance of coming back up. And I think the outright favourites are probably Featherstone. I think, you know, they've been really, really good for the last couple of years. They were slightly unlucky maybe to be involved in the season with Toulouse. They haven't lost to an English club for over a year. They've been absolutely outstanding. And as I said, any other season that didn't involve Toulouse, they absolutely would have gone up comfortably last year. But as it so happens, they've got to do it all again. And Lee and Featherstone started their campaign as they would have hoped. Lee with a 50-4 victory over Whitehaven, and Featherstone with a 30-12 win at York City Knights. And just a note on that, actually, it's really good to see Betfred Championship action being given TV coverage. They've got a deal with Premier Sports showing Monday Night Rugby League, and showcasing the Championship, because there are some big clubs down there. As I said, you know, you've got Lee, you've got Bradford Bulls, Widnes, Featherstone. But also you've got some of the smaller clubs down there. You know, you've got Whitehaven, Dewsbury Rams, obviously Workington back in the league, Barrow as well. So it's a fantastic showcase of the division and of the game itself. And to be getting TV coverage is fantastic. And certainly not something I never saw coming. I was really impressed with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And everyone looks forward to a Workington Whitehaven game or a Workington Barrow game. They're always good. Up here
in Cumbria,
big derbies. They're huge. And they're doing a lot of work just now at Workington Stadium and at Whitehaven that I'm aware of. So, yeah, it's going to be a really interesting season of Championship. I mean, when I lived in West Yorkshire, I called them Bradford Northern, so I always sort of swung towards them, and then up at Odds, or I used to go up to Odds, and became through the Bradford Bulls and all that. I really enjoyed it, and I'm a big fan of rugby league. I'm a fan of the family element of it. I love the way the fans intermingle and you get this great atmosphere. And I'm also a huge fan of Premier Sports doing this. I think it's been needed for a long time, and it's important. It's important for these clubs.
Absolutely, yeah. And I echo what you said about the atmosphere at rugby league. I don't think there's any point, much point in making comparisons between rugby union and rugby league, but just for rugby league as a standalone sport, it's fantastic because you see fans who are so, so passionate about the game. And as I said, I think that is partially down to it being located in such a dedicated heartland, that they live and they breathe rugby league in that sort of strip of land across Lancashire, Yorkshire, that area, that they live and breathe rugby league up there. And as such, you see it on the field and with the fans as well. You know, you get some big travelling. I mean, for example, again, I was at the London Broncos game, and Widnes, I don't know the exact figure, but they certainly brought a few hundred down to London, and they were very loud and they were very vocal, very passionate rugby league fans. And, you know, I mean, I expect Bradford to take a lot down. Of course, London Broncos just been drawn against them in the Challenge Cup. Yeah, Bradford will take a lot. I suspect Lee may take quite a few as well. Rugby league is a fantastic sport, and it doesn't get the coverage it deserves sometimes. So as you say, Premier Sports showing the Championship. Of course, you've got Super League as well, with some games on terrestrial TV. I think it's a good moment for the game, and hopefully it takes the game forward.
I hope so, because it's an essential part of sport. And it, like I say, especially around Yorkshire, Lancashire, it is huge there. You know, just you go to like Huddersfield, where of course they would just be Fartown. And of course, rugby league was formed in St George's Hotel there. So, I mean, the birthplace of rugby in Yorkshire, and it's just spread everywhere. And to think, you know, I mean, you're looking at Therestone, unlucky just to have to lose in that group.
Exactly, so unlucky. Yeah.
They've got to start again. I'm with you. I think Featherstone. I think they'll be trumped up. I think they'll get too much for everyone, and I think they'll make their way back to the top.
Absolutely, yeah. And it'll be, of course, fantastic to see Featherstone. A real rugby league club, I would say Featherstone Rovers.
Absolutely.
They're a rugby league town. Not too bothered about football. All about rugby league where they are. And passionate fans. Obviously, it's a great ground, Post Office Road as well. So it'll be great to see them in the Super League, and fingers crossed for them that could happen.
And looking at the Super League, what are you looking forward to, Kieran?
Well, as I said, I'm looking forward to possibly seeing the revival of Wigan. I think, as I said, with Sean Wayne back at the club in a slightly different role. Of course, Wigan, I mean, certainly me growing up, Wigan have always been one of the top sides, always been up there challenging. And to see them sort of languishing a little bit in the last year or two was strange, certainly for me, and disappointing for them. So I'm interested to see that. I'm also interested to see how Leeds Rhinos will do as well. And they had a young side last year and they did really well. And I think they're another side who, you know, they were right at the top for quite a number of years, but you've seen the likes of St Helens kick on, and they've kind of been left in the wake, so it'll be interesting to see how they get on. And also as well, I think that the sort of deal with Warrington and Castleford, of course we've seen Daryl Powell go to Warrington. Can he push them on and get them that long-awaited Super League title? And Castleford, you know, we saw Daryl Powell, he took them from a sort of a team from the lower echelons of the league to right up and challenge and get into finals. will Castleford be able to maintain that? You know, the Jungle is a fantastic ground. It's so unique.
It is.
I love the Jungle. And it can have a fantastic atmosphere. And again, another real proper rugby league town. It'll be interesting to see if they can stay competing now Daryl Power's gone. So that's what I'm looking forward to this Super League season. It should be a fantastic year.
And if you're going to put your neck on the line at this early stage, who would you go for?
Well, the easy option is to go for St. Helens. Of course it is.
it is, yeah.
And it's difficult to see past them. If I was going to say it was going to be anyone other than St. Helens, I'm going to say Warrington. I think, you know, that they have been close on a few occasions. They've been right up there. And I think with a manager the caliber of Daryl Powell, I think he has the potential to really kick them on. And of course, they've got a huge players like George Williams at the club now as well. I think it's a really exciting time for Warrington. They'll expect results quickly, though, of course, as their fans, I'm sure, will say. And if they can win the Super League, I mean, what better result could be than that? That would certainly be the perfect start to Daryl Powell's career there. So if I was going to say anyone other than St. Helens, I'm going to say Warrington Wolves.
I would actually agree with you. I think Leeds are going to come back. I think they're going to be tough. I think Warrington. I'm with you. I think they've got enough. But it's all about results and getting them early and quick enough and getting that momentum going.
Yeah, exactly. You're absolutely right. Because whenever there's a new coach in any sport, if you don't get off to a quick start, fans can quickly get on your back. And you know, it's very difficult to come back from that. So if they can sort of get to maybe sort of 3-0, 4-0, 5-0 maybe, get a run going early doors, I think that would certainly be beneficial for Warrington. And as I said, I certainly think they could be right up there challenging this year.
And looking at players, Kieran, is there any player, the one to watch? Is there any player that you would say is the one to watch this year that could be, you know, the difference between winning and losing? Is there any player that you would say, he's the one to watch? I think he's going to have a great season.
I would certainly say the signing of George Williams for Warrington was one that made everyone in rugby league sit up and take notice. And I think that players like him, you know, he spent some time in the NRL. Players like him could be the difference between finishing second, finishing third, and winning titles. So if I had to single out one player, you know, obviously St. Helens, have some absolutely fantastic talent. But when you include George Williams with players like Stephen Ratchford as well, obviously, who's still going strong, I would say he would be the player that could turn the tides for Warrington, which is partially why I would have said if anyone's other than St. Helens is going to win it, it would be them, along with Daryl Powell being their head coach.
And looking at the championship, I'm guessing you're going to go Featherstone.
Yeah, I'm going to go Featherstone. I wouldn't discount Lee. I think, you know, under Adrian Lamb, I think they've certainly got a real chance. And obviously just been relegated from the Super League as well. They'll want to bounce straight back, even though they didn't technically get promoted by merit. But yeah, I think it's very difficult to see past Featherstone.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree. There's always losers. Who do you think is going to be? Who do you think hasn't got enough? Who do you think is just going to fall short in the Super League?
It's difficult.
It is, isn't it? It's a bit unfair, that, isn't it, Kieran?
I think it all really counts on how to lose perform in the Super League. Of course, it's a bit of an unknown entity as to how they will do in their maiden season. I think if it's not to lose, I would worry for sides like Wakefield. I think if it isn't to lose, I would worry for a side like Wakefield and possibly Salford as well. One of those sides, they're usually kind of just hovering above the relegation zone. And you know, they often lose their best players. And I think that would probably be the case. Yeah, but so I'm going to go out on a limb and say Toulouse are going to survive and Wakefield will go down.
I'm going to go with Toulouse to stay up. And I think Salford, I think they've had so many close years. I just think this year, and I think they'll go down. I think Toulouse will do fine. I think they've got enough experience about them. They know how to get around a bit. And I think their home base, their fan base, will give them something as well. And looking at that, I'm with you. I just think Salford might struggle.
Absolutely, yeah. I would certainly say it's probably going to be one of those three sides: Wakefield, Salford, and Toulouse. That massively, and you could possibly throw Hull KR in that mix, although Hull KR have been impressive in the last year or so. But yeah, I would say certainly one of those three teams I would be concerned.
Yeah. Well, Kieran, it has been an absolute pleasure chatting to you. It's great having you on Proscast. And of course, we can follow you regular at prostinternational.com, where of course you will keep us up to date with the very latest news in your columns.
Thanks very much for having me on, Dennis. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Kieran, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Dennis Devlin, the host of Proscast, the voice of Pros International. Join me and our reporters as we bring you the biggest interviews and breaking news headlines from across the world of sport, including football, rugby, cricket, tennis, and much, much more. That's Proscast with me, Dennis Devlin, the voice of Pros International. Pros International, the world's game open to all.